Hey, it's Sam Alai here, founder of My Legal Academy, where we help lawyers scale and automate their law firms so they could sign up more clients and reclaim their precious time. If you're looking to grow your practice while working less, click the link in the show notes to book a free call to discover a radically different way to grow your law firm. Enjoy the episode.
The legal industry has sold women a dangerous lie about success and what it looks like today. Today, my guest is going to help me tear down that myth and rebuild success on our own terms. This isn't just another conversation about work-life balance. We're diving deep into how visionary women are completely rewriting the rules of wealth creation and freedom in law, creating models that the old guard never imagined possible. Laura is the architect of her own legal empire. She transformed from billing endless hours to building a practice that generates wealth while honoring her definition of success. She's here to share that unfiltered truth about what it really takes to build success on your own terms. Welcome back to the next episode of Built to Lead. Today, I'm super excited for our guest. She is amazing. She has been an MLA ambassador for the last 2 years, I would say, and a new author, and super excited to address today's topic with her. Laura, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, we are excited. So give us a little bit of background on, you know, your practice, who you are, what you do. And of course, we're going to be sharing about your book too. That'll be exciting.
Amazing. Yeah. So I've been practicing for about 10 years now. I launched my firm here in New York City in 2016, which seems like forever ago. And yet it's been, you know, 10 years. It's just kind of a crazy ride. So I did it for 4 years pre-COVID. And now we've been doing estate planning for 4 years post or 5 years post. Yeah, but I went to law school a little bit later in life. I was 35 when I went to law school, which,
oh, wow.
I know, a lot of surprises, a lot of people. I'm older than I look. So I was 35 when I went. And before that, I had a career as an accountant and I worked here in the city on Wall Street and some other places. So this is my 10th year in practice for myself. And it's been a wild ride, but it's the hardest thing I've ever done, but also the best, I think, and the most rewarding.
I love that. I think the biggest thing that I have learned over the past couple of years is that there seems to be a super rigid definition of success, you know, what that looks like. It's either billable hours, partnerships, corner offices. I mean, obviously you'd experience this in different areas. And I can't imagine that it's still not going on in those areas as well. But was there like a certain moment, even in those specific, you know, when you worked on Wall Street, that you realized that those traditional markers, like, they were not for you?
Yeah, I realized they were not for me, you know, a long time ago. And especially working for someone else, I realized that marker was one that didn't work for me. But yeah, as an attorney, and especially in an entrepreneurial area of law, which I think estate planning is very entrepreneurial, you really have to get out there and kind of hustle and network and whatnot. You know, that kind of law, I think, does get a lot. There's flexing no matter where you go. Like if you're in big law, there's flexing for the partnership. When you're in an entrepreneurial area, I see a lot of revenue flexing. And we've spoken about this before that, you know, double your revenue, triple your revenue. And there's a lot of kind of show muscle flexing, I feel like. And that it is a lot of flexing. And when I hear that, I just think to myself, you know, there's so much that goes into being successful beyond the kind of the shiny things that we see. And especially as an entrepreneur, I really feel that, you know, there's no point in having $1 million in revenue if you're working until 10 o'clock at night and you've got to spend the vast majority of it just to support the business. So
if your profit's nothing, I don't care how many millions your revenue is. I know that's a tough one. I think that's the biggest thing. I think I know when we have that conversation that so many people say, I just want a 2X. That is not even like, that's not a strategy. That's not, you know, understanding that has been a big thing. But I think the other thing that I see when you talk about estate planning being entrepreneurial, I didn't actually think about it that way, but I think, you know, you're definitely right. But I also see a lot of it's lifestyle. This is a lifestyle practice. So everything's going to be easy. You can be on the beach and you can do estate planning anywhere. And I feel like that's a bit of a farce. I mean, are people doing it? Yes. But there's a lot of work behind you guys marketing yourself and your practice and understanding that. So I think that's something that I've been seeing a lot more recently.
Yeah, it's easy in the sense that you do have a lot of control and flexibility and you can do it from anywhere. It doesn't mean that it's easy getting people to say, yes, I want to write you a check for $7,000 for my trust. And that doesn't, you know, being in a big city doesn't really help either. I get that a lot too. You know, in New York, it's easy. Well, yeah, there's like 1,000 lawyers out the door looking to under, you know, charge me or to charge less. So yeah, it is very entrepreneurial. And that means you have a lot of control, but it also means that you've got to kind of get out there. If you want to make $25,000 a month, you know, that's 5-6 clients. That means that's 5 or 6 people saying, yes, I want to write you a check for $7,000. That's not necessarily easy. So yeah, it works well if you're entrepreneurial, but there's some hurdles as well.
So looking at and thinking about that, especially and not just estate planning, but especially for women understanding what success looks like and defining what that looks like, what was that for you? I know that obviously, we talk about like the standard traditional success, meaning, you know, what does my revenue look like? What makes me successful? Is it, you know, and I think there's like a lot of flashiness plastered all over the internet these days. But how did you figure out like your success metrics? Was it one thing 10 years ago and it's totally different now? Or has it evolved? Or how did that kind of start for you?
I mean, it's evolved over the past 5 years, I would say, because COVID really shifted everything. So whatever my attitude was before, it's kind of irrelevant now, you know, because COVID changed everything. But I think it's a combination of, you know, wanting to have flexibility in where I work. So, you know, maybe you're not sitting on a beach, but it also doesn't mean that you have to be at the same office every single day. I think flexibility just in terms of what clients you work with, who you say yes to, who you say no to. Flexibility about how much you're charging and how many clients you want to see. You know, even if you're only seeing 2 estate planning clients per month, it doesn't mean that you're not doing amazing service and doing an amazing job. It just means that you're doing 2, maybe another lawyer is doing 10. So I think combining, you know, the time, the flexibility, the work, the profit is a part of it, but it's just one piece of the puzzle. Because if you start to tinker with the other pieces, you know, again, even if you are very profitable, does it really matter if you're working 15 hours a day? So it's kind of a mindset shift, I think, in a way, stepping back and saying, of course, we all want enough to pay our bills and then extra, you know, there's you have to earn the revenue. But when is more revenue not the answer? And just to start thinking about that, right? Maybe it is the answer now, but maybe it's not the answer. And it's kind of brave to say that, I think, because not many people are saying or acknowledging that. But I think I at least want lawyers to be able to acknowledge, you know, there's another way to think about this where you can get what you want without just ratcheting up the revenue meter.
Yes, that's a great question. I think that would be a definite question to ask yourself every time. Like, when is revenue not the answer? Because I think that's the first go-to inherently. I mean, I'll put out the survey and say, okay, what's the thing that you want in the next 6 months? And I specifically put, you know, money, time, freedom, and everyone answers money, but there's nothing behind that. Why? Why do you want the money? What is that? It's just, I think it's one of those things that maybe that is one of those traditional success markers that people like really consciously have a hard time rejecting and letting go of it because it's kind of, it's there. It's supposed to be how we look successful.
And you have to pay the bills, right? So, and I think maybe the presumption is, well, if I have enough money, then I'll be able to kind of buy the time and the other stuff. So I get it. And maybe it's better, you know, looked at when we speak with our lawyers one-to-one. You know, we just had a coaching call today where, you know, someone was struggling and you really have to kind of dial in and look, well, if you're struggling and you think the answer is to buy more ads, well, let's look at each step in the process because, you know, if you're getting a bunch of people in the door from your ads, that's great. But if you're not converting everyone at a fee you deserve, then maybe the problem is not the ads. Maybe the problem is your consultation, right? So it's just figuring out, we call it leaky buckets. You know, where's the break in the process that maybe you can fix without having to throw more money at ads? So having that, ads are great. I mean, I'm not close to ads.
So we're talking about money, we're talking about wealth, but is there a specific way that you've kind of structured your practice to build the wealth that you want without sacrificing yourself, your health? I've seen so many lawyers have health issues and the sacrifice comes from draining themselves into the ground from it. And how do you think that those are specific things that need to be more normalized, especially in the legal industry?
I think we need to be better at just acknowledging I should be focusing my time on the things that require a law degree. And that is going to look different. I've never practiced personal injury, for example, so I can't speak to that. For estate planning, you know, I really focus my time on the things that are going to generate revenue and that a lawyer needs to do, like hosting workshops, hosting the client consultation, doing the counseling. But a lot of what happens around that, the automations, the systems, what can a paralegal do? Maybe they do the first draft, and outsourcing as much as possible. Don't do everything, right? You should only be focusing on what you as the attorney need to focus on. And that in and of itself is a huge burden to get over, huge hurdle to get over, especially when you're just starting, you don't have a lot of money, you know, you're always trying to figure out what to spend money on. But you as the attorney should not be doing everything. You should be doing the revenue generating activities and then delegating or outsourcing a lot.
So what would you, what would advice then would you give for somebody who's just starting out, who obviously, when everybody's starting out, you're going to be doing way more things than you should be doing. But with that, what would be your advice for that? So it's you're just starting out. Obviously, it's going to be more of your time versus money until you've created more of that. But there's got to be some specific things that they can still do that will help not burn themselves out.
Yeah. And I think even when you're just starting, I kind of follow the model that I noticed when I was in the hedge fund world, like 10, 15 years ago. I learned a lot from sitting next to these really smart, you know, hedge fund guys. And the model was seemed to be the same. You know, you had a hedge fund guy who was out there and he was starting his business and it was just him. But he always started at least with an assistant, right? And so it was, even if you're just starting, you've got to have someone to pass off the admin stuff to. And maybe it's an assistant just 10 hours a week, 20 hours a week. But you need to start to kind of get into that mindset of, it is better when I'm pushing things off to someone else who is not an attorney. And I think so many lawyers, they've been doing everything themselves for so long that they can't even sort of wrap their heads around delegating. And so start with an assistant. A rock star assistant is what I call them. Just, you know, you can start pushing stuff off onto them. We need a fee sheet. Can you create this on Canva? We need this. Can you book it? And then you start to get an idea for, oh, yeah, I'm not supposed to be doing everything. And I also notice that when I give someone else the work, we get twice as much done in the same time. Yay.
You know, I think so focusing on the fact that, you know, I like to say this, like, do I like to go in Canva and create stuff? Yes, it's fun, but I will be the one that spends 10 hours doing it because I'm not good at it. I'm super picky about everything. I'm not going to like it. But if somebody else did it, I'm like, oh, that's great. You got it done in 30. I love it.
Yep. If I had nothing else to do, I'd spend all day in Canva, but I have other stuff to do.
What do you think for you then? I would say starting out, we'd say the assistant. And then as you've grown, what would be like the most profitable pivot that you made in your business model, like as you've progressed?
Yeah, with estate planning, the thing I would say is the first thing you should do is outsource your drafting. And I speak a lot about estate planning because that's the only kind of law that I practice. But, you know, that is a big bottleneck. It takes 2 to 3 hours to really draft a comprehensive estate plan, even with the drafting software and whatnot. And it's just kind of tedious data entry. You know, you as the lawyer have done a lot of the heavy lifting in the design meeting and whatnot. So finding a really good drafter, a virtual paralegal, they don't have to live in the same area, but just someone who you know is going to draft really solid documents for you is the first thing that I would pick. And then maybe someone to help with marketing. That's another one. And the nice thing about this, and this is what Sam teaches, is, you know, there's a lot of possibilities out there, you know, overseas VAs, VAs here. There's a lot of options and you can find someone who's really good at their little piece. And then maybe, you know, maybe it's a part-time thing, but that's what they focus on.
I think the biggest thing is just being willing to, and I've said this so many times, but being willing to do it differently, being willing to do in a way that feels good for you. Like, everybody can make suggestions. I mean, business is business. There's only so many ways, you know, that you can do business. There's only so many fancy ways that we can go out there and market. But if you're doing something that doesn't feel good to you, if it doesn't feel like it's aligned with your business, I feel like it's such a force that things are just never going to go in the direction that you want them to go in.
Yeah, exactly. And I have yet to meet an attorney who really likes the drafting part. Maybe if that's all they were doing, maybe they'd love it. But really, it's like one thing out of many that you have to do. So that's the big one to just get off your plate right away. And then I follow Sam's advice. You know, back in the day when you had an assistant before law school, I was an assistant at these hedge funds and I kind of did everything because that's sort of the way that it was. Well, now you've got people all over the world who are really specialized in a certain thing. So you might have 7 or 8 VAs doing 7 or 8 different things. It's just the way that it is now.
Yeah, I think besides COVID really pushing the legal industry into that and understanding that you can have a person that maybe only works for you 5 hours a week, but they're so good at that one thing that they get it all done. I think understanding, and it is so strange to me because lawyers, you guys are very specific. You know your specific skill and you're willing to do it. But when you're looking at everyone else, we kind of look at, well, maybe we'll just have this person do all the things. And I think that that takes away from obviously utilizing everybody's skill and then passion. I think that moves people away from staying with you as well. I think if they're not loving what they do.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's a whole new ballgame. It's interesting because I'm 49 now. So I've been working for many, many years. And it's those of us who are old enough now, like we can kind of look back and say it used to be a lot different, you know, and this is how it is now. So it's always changing. But yeah, just getting used to having at least one really great staff member to delegate.
Yes, I think the expectations, I think about that too. Like when you, I worked at a very large insurance company when I first, I was 17 or 18 years old. And that was the thing, like, you're the assistant, you do every single thing. Like there isn't one thing that you don't do here. And now I look at it and like, no, I would like very skilled people to do specific things because I feel like it gets done better, it gets done faster, and people are happier, which was not, nobody cared about that.
Care about that back in the day.
Just do the work.
You're getting paid, aren't you? That's enough.
Yes. Oh my God. So I want to shift to the idea of freedom because I think the word in itself, I think like we said in the beginning, I feel like from the majority of the practice types, that word seems to only be allowed to be talked about in estate planning because that's the freedom, you know, based practice area. So it's like a dirty word in all the other practice areas. But I also feel like a lot of women feel guilty talking about wanting freedom and talking about wanting to have control over their firm, their clients, their business, and what it looks like. And so I'm curious how you kind of reconciled that desire yourself. And maybe part of it is the fact that you had the ability to work in some other areas that you realized made you realize what you don't want. But for the women that are just, you know, they're in their own practice and maybe they've been in it for 20 years, I still feel like there's some space there for them to understand and to be vocal about what that looks like.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that's helpful as an attorney, if you're going to have problems either way, right? So you're either going to have problems if you're working in big law, you're going to have the nice things that come with big law, but you're going to have the bad things that go with big law as well. And when you've got your own firm, it's the same thing. The nice thing about having your own firm, though, is that at least you have a lot more control, I think, over the problems that you have. You know, it's your firm. You decide who you hire, who you fire, what you charge. You kind of decide everything. So to the extent that, you know, women are looking for a career in law, I know it sounds scary to think of starting your own firm, but it might provide a lot more flexibility. And I think if you're even a little bit entrepreneurial, then that's an interesting path to take. But the general conversation that, you know, and this is in my book, there's a whole chapter in my book, you know, what makes a good lawyer? And let's stop and think about what we think that is, which is, you know, someone who bills however many hours they're supposed to bill or who's got a $10 million firm or, you know, you go down the list. Is that how you still define a good lawyer? You know, maybe your definition of a good lawyer is now actually very different. And let's just open up the possibility for saying you can still be a good lawyer, even if you're only working part time. You know, my law practice is kind of part-time right now. I'm serving 4 or 5 clients a month in estate planning. They all give me a 5-star review. You know, I'm still doing a great job. It's just that I have other things that are filling up my time. Let's try to normalize that.
I think, too, is that there are some people that come in and say, I don't want to do any of the business stuff. I want to hire the people to do that. I just want to be a lawyer and I enjoy doing that. And then there are people that come in and say, I really want to shift off into being more the CEO and doing more of those things and hire someone else to do the law work. And I think both of those things are okay based on what you want, but I find how scary it is for people to actually admit it. Like, especially if it's, I don't want to do the law work anymore, or maybe I only want to pick certain cases that I'd like to handle. So many times I've seen so many people just be afraid to say that out loud. And it's such a stigma.
It is. And it's also hard mentally. Like, I've gone to law school. I spent all this money. I've been doing this. Like, you know, look at all the effort that I put into this to mentally acknowledge, well, maybe I don't really like practicing either law or I don't like this particular kind of law. It's hard. That's hard sometimes to acknowledge. But we go through that exercise in the book, actually. I'm glad that you're mentioning this because we've got a couple of chapters on this in the book where it's literally just kind of walking through. You know, what does this look like to you? And it's okay if your answer has shifted. Whatever reason you had for going to law school at 22, 28, 45, whenever you went, if that's not where you are now, it's okay to kind of course correct, I think is a good way of putting it. You can course correct.
And you know what? I think that for those that are like wanting to step into that CEO role, I almost, you know, want to scream to them, like, this is, I'm applauding you for that. This is not something that you know. You are relearning an entire new role and it's not easy. And so, the fact that you want to do it and you're excited to do it, I feel like jump into it because that's to me, if somebody said, oh, but you went to law school, I would be like, yeah, but this is a whole new version of school for me that I get to be excited about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've made a lot of pivots over my life. I mean, I started out as a CPA. I did that for a few years. I will never work as a CPA again as long as I live. I'm glad I have that background, but just because I went to that, you know, I have a degree in accounting doesn't mean that I'm going to tether to that for the rest of my life. So, yeah, it's okay just to stop and say, you know what's working, what's not. Be honest with yourself. And then I don't like to come at things from a position of fear, but rather opportunity. And these are scary times for a whole bunch of different reasons, but I think there's also a lot of opportunity that, you know, with AI and with, you know, flexibility and just all the things that are shifting, this presents a lot of opportunities to lawyers as well. So I try to point that out. You know, it's scary, but some things are changing and maybe there's going to be opportunities for us in the future that we like more than what we have now.
Yeah, I think that goes into not just like mindset shift, but like an identity piece, being okay with like my self-perception is as a lawyer, and now I have to change that perception into a business owner, and that evolving and kind of really owning that part of it. I think it is exactly what you said. You go to school, you spent all this money and you got the law degree and you know everything's great, and that's like your whole identity, and being willing to change your identity and change the mindset around that is definitely something that I totally understand to be super scary, but I think that it's a powerful thing to do. And I think that it should be celebrated. It should be, you know, acknowledged.
It should be. And I think, you know, as women, we struggle with this a little bit more. I guess I can only speak for myself, but it seems like we're awfully hard on ourselves. You know, it seems like there's a lot of beating up. I can speak to this personally and, you know, overthinking. But one of the nice things I like about 2HLL, we've got about 500 lawyers in the community now, and we're still growing, you know, and the idea is just to be really kind of supportive with each other and just acknowledge. You know, we're all here for different reasons. We've all got different circumstances. Try to not, you know, compare yourself to others. It's okay to sort of stay in your lane, do the best work that you're doing. And if your model looks different from someone else's, you know, that's okay.
I think too, like, and we kind of touched on this before, but in looking in the conversations, except especially for women, being willing to be vocal to speak up, because when we look out there at the conversations that we were having, I told you this when I looked it up on like Reddit and Quora, and I'm like, the only things I could find that they said women were talking about was what they're supposed to wear to court or the fact that they hate being a lawyer and they want to quit. And I'm like, that is absolutely not the case. And I wouldn't know that to not be the case of, you know, not working with lawyers and hearing what they had to say. And but I mean, that's what's out there. And I'm like, women are having other conversations. They're just not having them out loud. And for those that aren't having the conversations, those are the ones I think that it's scary, because those are the ones I think make those kind of decisions about leaving and not doing it just because they feel like they have no other option.
Yeah, this tees right up to my book. At a minimum, read the book because we spend a little bit of time in there just talking about. I mean, the title of the book is The Lifestyle Lawyer Revolution: How to Live a Life You Love Without Leaving the Law. You know, so if you really want to leave the law, like I'm not going to stop you, okay? You know, but having said that, let's kind of think about this first. Let's see if there's a way that we can make all of this work. And we talk about that in the book.
Yeah, I actually couldn't believe when I started looking at that how many. So there's a lot of obviously coaching options out there for lawyers, depending on your practice type, depending on what you want to try to do. But when I looked at the women that were doing it, that's all I could find was, I'm going to coach you how to not be a lawyer, how to change your career path. And I'm like, what about if that's not, you know, that is not the option that they want, but they feel like that's all I can find out there. It was just one of those things that I was kind of taken aback a little bit, to be honest, because there is no men coaches out there saying, leave the law, I'm going to show you how. That is not what they're saying.
No. Oh my God, I had no idea this was even the case. That's all you could find when you Googled it? Well, that's a bummer.
Yes.
Yeah, we've got more to say than that.
It was unbelievable. I'm like, now, like you said, if you're totally want to leave and you want to be an accountant or you want to, you know, decide to do something else, that's great. But when I'm looking at it as the only option, I'm like, this is terrible, because I looked at all of the male coaches. And again, we're just talking about how we're going to make everything better. We're going to hustle and we're going to double our revenue. And I'm like,
well, and the funny thing, oh no, I cut you off. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
But yeah, I mean, and the funny thing about that too, is that this just reminds me, just when I hear that, the double Xing the revenue, I think, okay, that's great. Like, we all want that. But I'm also thinking in the back of my head, but that's going to mean 20 more meetings a month and hiring two more people. And it's going to mean all these other things. And I feel like they're not looking at all the work that's going to happen behind it. They're just looking at the show numbers. Anyway, that's just a whole different.
No, I agree. I had that conversation with someone who mentioned that. And I'm like, what is it that you want your profit to be? And I got deer in the headlights. And I'm like, you have to know what you want your profit to be. When we scale you, let's look at everything that scales. You just got done telling me you have to hire another attorney. That means that attorney's going to need assistant, because you can't spread your team too thin. And then we talked about having your team track their time, and they're like, oh my God, they would hate it. And I'm like, but you have no idea what's going on foundationally, like none whatsoever. And I get it. I get that, like, you know, we've said they're great attorneys. Business is not the thing. But that is where I like to interject. Like, you don't have the time to figure it out. You love what you do. So you need to have somebody in helping you establish this, because it's the whole piece. You know, if you're ever planning on leaving and selling or retiring, I mean, you have to have these things in place.
Yeah, you want to build a firm that you can sell, like, at a minimum. Yeah, we hear this word, like, you know, scale, like, I want to scale it up. And it's like, okay, well, let's actually look at, you know, that's fine. We can help you do that. We'll throw more money at ads. I know it's going to get more in the door, which is great. But that's also going to mean, you know, 10 more meetings a month. And like, let's look at what that's going to mean. Do you want to host 10 more consultations a month? Maybe the answer is, sure, I'm fine with that. But the answer might be, I actually don't. You know, it's not worth the extra revenue if it means I'm going to have to sit down with 10 more consults. So it's just up to you, but you've got to look at the whole picture.
I think scale too is like a fashionable, buzzy type word these days. Like, what does scale mean to you? Because that's not what it's going to mean to, you know, a firm that's already doing, you know, been around 20 years doing multiple eight figures. I mean, their scale is not what it's going to look like. And I think that word is just, it's one of those two things, the 2Xing and the 5Xing, and it's flashy. Until you realize that there's no easy button, that there's work that's going to have to be done. And if you're comfortable with the amount of work that you're doing right now, 2Xing is not the answer, because that is not the amount of work you're going to be doing tomorrow.
Yeah, you're going to be doing more work and you're going to have some more money in the bank, but it's, you know, it's always a trade-off, your money or your time. I think there's a book that's actually called that, Your Money or Your Time. I think that's
I know. And Sam says it a lot too, though. Like, you have one or the other. You either have the time or you have the money. And so it is a buy-off and a trade that, you know, especially for people who are like, yes, I want to scale right now, but maybe I don't have the money to hire the amount of people. Well, that means everybody, including yourself on your team, are going to be doing double the work. And are you ready for that? Because the pushback that can come back from your team is also not great. Not a great place to be.
Yeah. And also, you know, I hear that and I think, well, my gosh, now you've got all these clients that you have to serve. And you're going to get some bad reviews if you don't have the team to support them, you know, so you want the growth to be manageable, because what you don't want is to get like 50 new clients. You get a bunch of money in the door and now you've got 40 of them leaving bad reviews because you didn't have the staff to give them 5-star service. So you just need to be a little bit more thoughtful is all I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree. I think having the things in place and I think we're all quick to jump to, you can just automate it and you could just, you know, AI it, and you can, and those things are great and they're happening, but there's certain pieces, and I'll tell you, I laugh at this now because obviously it's a big thing in law right now where we're talking about how much can I automate and not do, or have, you know, not have my team do. There's actually a lawyer that's, you know, still doing commercials, and the main thing in their commercial now is, we are not going to push you off to AI. You are actually going to still have the great customer service and you're going to be able to speak to our team. And I was like,
that is the exact opposite of what everybody else is saying right now. So I listened to, I perked up. I was like, oh, well, what did he just say? Because that's not what you're hearing. And so I think the customer service piece is something that I see often as a problem where what is the biggest complaint that we don't get back to our clients? Well, adding more is not going to help that.
Yeah. It's always a trade-off, and I'm all for growth, but you know, you don't want to grow so big that you start giving bad service and all of that. So it's not easy, but the nice thing about having your own firm is if at least, you know, you're in charge a little bit more than you would be if you were working for someone else. So
for the women that are listening to this, that maybe they feel like they're still kind of trapped in traditional structures or not really sure how to break out of that, what would be like the first step that you would tell them to take to like redefine what it looks like for them?
Well, the first step I would say, let me just give you a piece of encouragement. That's the first thing that I would say. You know, I didn't start a business. I think I was 39 when I launched my practice, which felt ancient at the time. And now I look back and I'm like, it's not even. But anyway, I was 39 when I first, you know, launched my practice. Up until that point, I'd always worked for someone else. And I'd had really, really good jobs, you know, Ernst & Young, Goldman Sachs, hedge funds. Like I'd had very good jobs working for very good people. But I didn't really get to show who I really was and what I was really capable of until I started my own law firm and I had my own business. And I even tell people, I don't think I really became the person that I was meant to be until I started my own business at age 40, right? So this isn't to push anyone into starting their own firm, but do stop and consider just how limited you might be. It's very hard, even if you're really smart and really capable, which I'm both of those things, but it's hard to fit, you know, that square peg into whatever round hole you're getting at your 9 to 5. So I bloomed times 1,000 when I went out and did my own thing. So the one thing I would say to women who are thinking about starting their own practice or just doing anything brave, anything, is you might be surprised at how limited you are. And you do have a security, kind of a safety net when you've got a salary, but you're limited in a lot of other ways. So you're probably full of potential is what I'm guessing. And that and you're not too old is the other thing I would say. You know, so
yeah,
you're not too old. I felt like I was too old, but I don't feel like that anymore. And I'm just going to tell everyone else, you're not too old.
That's something that I think is scary. Change is scary for people doing things, you know, out of the norm is scary. But I think that, and I always like to kind of like, I've been closing these out with something that's either something they can implement. But I think for this episode and for you, I think something powerful to kind of leave women with would be like understanding, especially coming from you and what you believe is possible for the future of women in law, if they really just had the courage to redefine success on their own terms and what it looks like for them. And also being willing to be a voice for other women that are struggling to have that voice.
Yeah. I'll tell you something that one of my very first mentors told me when I first started my practice and I started going out and hosting workshops in my community, which even at age 40 as a JD CPA, I was still thinking, am I allowed to go host workshops? Am I allowed to stand up at the front of the room? So I'll say this to all of the women listening. Yes, you are allowed. You're allowed to go stand at the front of the room. You're allowed to go start the business. You're allowed to take up space at the table. Don't wait for someone else to give you permission. Because I think as women, we tend to wait. Like, am I allowed to do that? Is someone supposed to tell? No, just go do it. You know, be bold.
And I think when because we're, you know, women, we're very, you know, nurturing, but when we're very like, you know, we keep things in. And so we think about redefining success. Oh, this is just about my personal fulfillment. How this doesn't reflect everyone else. How does this affect everyone else? But I would challenge that by doing that, by creating new models for yourself, by redefining what that looks like, by being vocal, I think you can help create and transform the entire profession moving forward. Think about all of the girls that are in school right now, that are graduating, that are taking the bar, that are excited to be a lawyer. They need these specific things. They need to see women talking about these things and being willing to do it so that they have something to look to. They have the type of mentors. Because right now, it's the only thing they get to see is the traditional aspect and what they feel like they have to do.
Yes. And for all the women lawyers who are listening, you are that mentor. You are that. You're there. You're the attorney, right? So you're allowed to start speaking. And that'll be the last thing that I'll say. It took me a long time to really find my voice, I think. And I didn't really find it until I started with my own business, started hosting workshops. And now I feel very, very comfortable speaking in public. And it's like, you're not going to get me to shut up. But it took me getting over that hump of like, am I even allowed to do this? But once you get into the position where you're more vocal, you're more, better able to articulate what you want, et cetera, that's when the impact and the influence and the income really comes. Like, there's no limit to your impact, income, influence if you're willing to kind of stand up and speak about what you believe. And now I'm getting kind of philosophical here, but you get the idea. You've got to be a little bit more.
Totally. So I think to leave everyone listening to this, I would challenge you to look at one traditional metric, one success metric that you feel like is keeping you trapped, and reject it this week. Create a new measure of success for yourself and embrace it, and look at how you can do that continuously. We start with one, and it's just, you know, the snowball effect of all of the things that will eventually completely change the way that you practice and the way that your practice looks like.
Start with one. That's a good idea.
I love it. Thank you, Laura. I appreciate you coming on, and we're super excited. We will have the link to Laura's book in the show notes. And if you have questions, Laura's also in Lawyer Club community. You can always access her there as well. But we thank you for coming on today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to The Law Entrepreneur. If you found value in the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. And don't forget to share the episode with a friend. It could help transform their life. To get access to a treasure trove of exclusive free resources for lawyers, go to joinlawyerclub.com. Again, that's joinlawyerclub.com. We'll see you on the next episode.